Merry Christmas, if you celebrate. And welcome to another episode of the Feminization Boudoir Podcast from Candy Apple Press. I am your host, Kylie Gable, former teacher. I am happy to say I have ended that particular gig in Friday. And although I will miss the students, there is so much about that job I will not miss. So, without further ado, we have a Christmas episode. I have a tradition, and I'm really fond of it. It is doing Hallmark-inspired forced feminization stories for Christmas. And I just completed my fourth one, and that is what we will be playing tonight. Now, this is a little bit of a mix-up. Things with the holidays are a little different than I had planned. So you're actually going to be getting the full audio. Usually, the premium people get the full audio, and you get a cut of it, and this time I'm putting the full thing on here, and I will make it up to the premium people next week. They pay $15 a month, so I want to keep them happy, but I want you to have a really good podcast for this particular day. So without further ado, written by me, narrated by Mr. DJ, it is the Christmas Stockings, and definitely you will probably see some similarities if you are familiar with Hallmark Christmas stories.
Christmas Stockings, written by Kylie Gable and published by Candy Apple Press. Copyright 2023. All rights reserved. My name is Noelle Keating, and I am the owner and manager of the Cozy Cottage Bed and Breakfast here in Garland, Ohio. Only about 3,000 people live in town, and it's never been bigger than that, or about double that size, even in the boom of the 1950s. We're tucked away in the shadow of Campbell Hill, and our number one industry right now is Christmas. We have Christmas tree farms, a beautiful downtown shopping area, and even in 2023, we still manage to put on a beautiful white Christmas every year. My whole family lives here. My mom and dad run the hardware store, and my Uncle Hank is the town's sheriff. In fact, that is where this story begins. Hank and his deputy, Ed Caldwell, saw a car going 10 miles over the limit and driving erratically on Campbell Road. 10 miles per hour over the limit isn't much, but at this time of year, that road gets very icy. When they pulled the driver over, he gave them attitude. If you want to piss off my uncle, ask him if he knows who you are, and start acting like your life in the big city is somehow more important than what we have going on in Garland. Well, they run this piece of works license, and they find something like a half dozen unpaid tickets, and they need to take him into custody until a judge can straighten things out. But the problem is, no judge is going to be available until after Christmas. They have to take him to jail, but no sooner do they get him into the police car. Then Ed reminds my uncle that they can't use the jail because that's where all the toys for the holiday toy drive are stored. Like I said, we do Christmas right in Garland. The toy drive is always a huge success, and that two little cells in the sheriff's office were packed from floor to ceiling with toys. That's where I come in. As Blake Ryman walked into the cozy cottage with my Uncle Hank and his deputy, I was a little puzzled. He didn't look like a criminal, and he wasn't even cuffed. I thought maybe his car had broken down or something, and my uncle had rescued him. He was a good-looking guy and well-dressed. He definitely appeared to be a professional, and his eyes, wow, you could get lost in those things. "This is Blake Ryman," said Uncle Hank. "He's not a very good driver. Not only did we get him for speeding, driving too fast for conditions, and texting while driving, but he had unpaid tickets. We need to keep him in custody until we can get him a hearing with the judge." "He's not going to be able to get a hearing until after Christmas. Is that really necessary?" I asked. I was not without sympathy for the poor guy, who was obviously not a hardcore criminal or anything. "Finally, somebody makes some sense," interjected Blake. "Unfortunately, we don't really have a choice," replied Deputy Caldwell. "And we can't use the jail cells because of the toy drive." "Oh yeah, that is a problem," I replied. "We were hoping he could stay here," said Uncle Hank. "He's not dangerous, and it would probably be a lot better place to spend Christmas than any place I can think of. Do you have a room? I do, but it's not exactly a prison cell, I said. We'll take it, replied Deputy Caldwell. Welcome to the cozy cottage, I said, giving Blake a friendly smile. We'll find a way to make your stay as comfortable as possible, even under these circumstances. Comfortable? Blake scoffed, his eyes darting around the cozy interior. I should be in my penthouse suite right now, not this country dollhouse. I bristled at his dismissive tone, but I still kept my composure. I could see that he was going to push every one of my buttons. I assure you, Mr. Ryman, your room will be much more pleasant than a jail cell. And the food is better, too. Good, Blake said curtly, not even bothering to look at her as he spoke. I can see a TripAdvisor review shaping up already. Hank patted my shoulder, reassuringly. You've got this, sweetheart. I know you can handle him. Thanks, Uncle, I replied softly. And you, he said, turning to address Blake. If you are anything other than a model guest for my niece, I'll take you to my office and lock you in the restroom myself. I watched as my uncle and his deputy left us alone in the warmly lit foyer. Despite my usual confidence, I couldn't shake the feeling that things were about to get very interesting at the cozy cottage bed and breakfast. I led Blake up the narrow staircase, the wooden steps creaking beneath our feet. The house was filled with the scent of fresh pine and cinnamon, a combination that usually brought comfort to my guests. But I didn't get the feeling that Blake even noticed. I opened the door to a charming room adorned with festive decorations and a quilted bedspread. I loved the way that our rooms had been decorated, but I have to admit, Blake's comment calling my place a country dollhouse still stung. Here's your room, I announced, trying to maintain my cheerful demeanor, despite Blake's sour attitude. I hope you find it to your liking. Blake eyed the room with disdain. Every minute I'm stuck in this place, I'm losing money. Can't you people understand that? Mr. Ryman, I know this isn't the ideal situation for you, but please, try to enjoy the holiday spirit while you're here. I gestured to the twinkling fairy lights strung along the window. Christmas is just another day for me, he snorted. Your quaint traditions don't mean much to someone like me. I sighed internally, wondering how I'd manage with such an ungracious guest. Well, dinner will be at 7 if you decide to join us. Otherwise, there's a tray of cookies and hot cocoa in the sitting room. Whatever, Blake muttered, dismissing me as he flopped onto the bed. Good night, Mr. Ryman, I said quietly, closing the door behind me. As the latch clicked into place, I couldn't help feeling a pang of loneliness for the man locked away in his own bitterness. My mom always said that some people are just determined to be miserable, and that certainly seemed to apply to Blake. Of course, he never made it down for dinner, so I did prepare a plate for him and bring it up to his room. He ate it, joylessly, but the poor man couldn't live on cookies now, could he? I woke up early the next morning to prepare breakfast. The sky outside was still dark, and the kitchen was bathed in the warm glow of the oven light. A faint noise caught my attention, a floorboard creaking, followed by a soft thud. My heart raced as I tiptoed towards the staircase, unsure of what I might find. Going somewhere, Mr. Ryman? I asked, my voice steady despite the adrenaline pumping through my veins. There stood Blake, clad in his coat and hat, trying to slip out the front door. None of your business, he snapped, visibly annoyed at being caught. Actually, it is my business, I retorted, crossing my arms. My uncle entrusted me with your care, and I don't intend to let him down. Now you can either go back to your room or join me in the kitchen for some breakfast. Blake glared at me, weighing his options. Finally, with a defeated sigh, he followed me back into the warmth of the kitchen, leaving his escape plans behind, at least for now. This place is costing me thousands of dollars every minute I'm stuck here, Blake muttered, his voice dripping with bitterness. He crossed his arms and glared at me as though it were all my fault. Sometimes there's more to life than money, Mr. Ryman. It's almost Christmas, after all, I replied gently, trying to stifle my annoyance with his attitude. Easy for you to say, he snapped, pulling his cell phone out of his pocket. You don't have deals hanging in the balance. Neither do you, not now, anyway. Why don't you try to enjoy the holiday? I suggested, mustering a smile that felt more like a grimace. Whatever, Blake grumbled, turning away from her and prowling around the kitchen like a caged animal. Here, I said, motioning to the cabinet with the dishes in them. The least you can do is help set the table. The morning sun peeked through the frosted windows, casting a warm glow over our little bed and breakfast. I couldn't help but admire the intricate ice patterns on the glass as I carried a stack of plates into the dining room. Blake followed behind me with a tray of silverware, his brows furrowed in concentration. We moved together in a comfortable silence, setting the table for the guests who would soon be joining us for breakfast. As I reached for another plate, I noticed how the Christmas tree pattern danced in the sunlight. It was a design my mother had chosen years ago, reminiscent of her own childhood memories. Blake's voice broke the silence, his eyes fixed on the plates. Hey, these remind me of my grandma's plates, he said softly, a hint of nostalgia in his tone. We used to have big family gatherings every Christmas at her house. But when she passed away, everything changed. My parents just didn't seem interested in carrying on the tradition. They'd give me a check for $1,000 and let me buy whatever toys or video games I wanted. I could see the longing in his eyes, so different from the cold, calculating businessman I'd first met. It sounds like your grandma meant a lot to you, I said, placing a comforting hand on his arm. Blake smiled wistfully. Yeah, she did. She made Christmas feel special, you know. I nodded, feeling an unexpected warmth towards him. For a moment, we stood there in the soft morning light, lost in memories of happier times. Your hair looks really pretty in this light, by the way, he said, giving me a shy smile. The compliment caught me off guard, and my cheeks flushed with a mixture of surprise and pleasure. Thank you, I murmured, unsure of how to respond to such an unexpected remark. I busied myself with adjusting the tablecloth, trying to hide my sudden bout of nerves. Sorry if that was out of line, Blake said, sensing my discomfort. I just thought you should know. I met his gaze and saw the sincerity in his eyes. No, it's okay, I replied, offering him a small smile. I appreciate the compliment. As we continued setting the table, I couldn't help but steal glances at Blake. There was something about him that intrigued me, a side of him hidden beneath the brusque exterior he presented to the world. And as we chatted about our favorite Christmas memories, I felt a growing warmth between us. A spark that hinted at an attraction neither of us had acknowledged before. The aroma of cinnamon rolls wafted through the air as I brought the tray out to the dining room. My heart swelled with pride. Knowing that my baking had such a delicious effect on everyone gathered around the table. The Motleys, an older couple who were full of spunk and sass, chuckled to themselves as they exchanged playful banter. The Leonards, a young white couple with stars in their eyes, gazed around the room, soaking in the old-fashioned charm of the bed and breakfast. And then there was Mrs. Willoughby, a widowed woman in her 60s who seemed to find comfort in being surrounded by the cheeriness of the holiday season. "Wow, Noelle, these cinnamon rolls smell heavenly," Mrs. Willoughby remarked as she reached for one. I don't think I've ever seen them look so perfect. Thank you, Mrs. Willoughby. I'm glad you liked them, I replied, my cheeks warming at the compliment. As I took my seat next to Blake, I caught his eye and noticed a hint of admiration in his expression. "How do you make that glaze, Noel?" asked Mrs. Motley. "It's just butter, sugar, powdered sugar, and vanilla," I replied. "I don't care what's in. I want it. Dig in, everyone," Mr. Motley announced with gusto, prompting laughter from the other guests. As the warmth of conversation flowed between us all, I couldn't help but feel grateful for this eclectic group of people who had come together for the holidays. Despite our different backgrounds and life stories, we found common ground in our love for Christmas and the simple pleasure of a shared meal. "Can I just say," Mr. Motley began, raising his glass of orange juice in a mock toast, "that it's moments like these that truly make life worth living. We may come from different walks of life, but gatherings like this remind us what's really important: connection, love, and making the most of every day." "Hear, hear," Mrs. Motley chimed in, raising her own glass. "Life's too short to take for granted," Mr. Motley continued, his eyes settling on the Leonards. "You two are young, and you probably think you have all the time in the world to chase your dreams and make memories. But trust me when I say that time flies faster than you can imagine. So don't waste a second of it." As Mr. Motley's words hung in the air, I couldn't help but steal a glance at Blake. Was he thinking the same thing I was? That maybe, just maybe, we shouldn't let this unexpected connection between us go unexplored? "Thank you, Mr. Motley," Sarah Leonard said softly, touched by his heartfelt speech. "We'll remember that." "Good," Mr. Motley replied, a satisfied smile on his face. "Now let's all enjoy these wonderful cinnamon rolls, shall we?" Happy conversation filled the room as everyone dug into their breakfast, the camaraderie between us stronger than ever. And as I sat there feeling the warmth of friendship and the magic of the season, I knew that this would be a Christmas I'd never forget. It was nearly noon when I finished washing the breakfast dishes. The Leonards and Motleys had left to explore the town, and Mrs. Willoughby was reading by the fireplace. Blake had offered to help with the dishes, but prisoner or not, he was still a guest. It had been such a lovely morning, full of laughter and heartfelt conversations. I couldn't help but feel a sense of contentment that seemed so rare these days. As I dried my hands on a towel, my gaze drifted to the parking lot outside. My heart leapt into my throat when I spotted Blake, trying to make his way across the snow-covered pavement without being noticed. Evidently, he hadn't learned his lesson from the last time he attempted to escape. "Unbelievable," I muttered under my breath. I thought things had gone so well this morning, but I wasn't about to let him go without a fight. I threw open the door, the icy wind biting at my cheeks, and sprinted toward him. I don't know if he didn't hear me, or if he was just trying to ignore me, but he didn't even glance over his shoulder. "Blake!" I shouted, my voice thick with anger and frustration. And then, with a burst of speed I didn't even know I possessed, I tackled him. We both tumbled into a nearby snowbank, our limbs tangled together in a cold, powdery mess. "Oof," he grunted, his face contorted in surprise and pain. I straddled him, pinning his arms down with my hands to prevent any further attempts at fleeing. "What the hell, Noel?" "Did you really think I wouldn't notice?" I panted, my cheeks flushed with exertion and adrenaline. "You can't just sneak away like this." "Let me go," he demanded, struggling against my grip. But I held firm. Honestly, he was considerably bigger than me, and I know my strength had been augmented by my adrenaline, but he would have had no trouble picking me up and depositing me into the snowbank if he had been determined. "Listen to me," I said, my voice low and serious. "My uncle has your car, and there's no way you'll make it out of town without it. Besides, resisting arrest is no joke, Blake. Do you want to spend the new year in jail?" He stopped fighting then, his eyes glassy with an expression I hadn't seen from him before, maybe it was disappointment. The truth was, I didn't know why he'd given up so easily this time, but one thing was clear. He wasn't going anywhere, at least not for now. "Fine," he muttered, defeated. "You win." "Good," I said, my tone softening slightly as I stood up and brushed the snow off my clothes. "Now, let's go back inside before we freeze to death out here." I marched Blake back to the bed and breakfast, my grip firm on his arm. I could feel the cold air biting at my cheeks as we approached the door. The festive lights twinkling above us seemed to mock his attempted escape. "Where are you taking me?" he asked, his voice tense with apprehension.
"Somewhere where you can't cause any more trouble," I replied, trying to keep my tone light despite the situation.
As we entered the cozy warmth of the living room, Mr. and Mrs. Motley looked up from their game of checkers by the fireplace. Their eyes followed us curiously, but I didn't have time to explain right then. Instead of leading him to his own room, I guided him down the hallway to mine. Blake's eyes widened in surprise when I pushed open the door, revealing my sanctuary, a small but cozy space filled with bookshelves, fairy lights, and a plush queen-sized bed.
"Wait, why am I in here?" he stammered, his cheeks flushing a deep shade of red.
"Because it's closer to the kitchen, and I need to keep an eye on you," I said matter-of-factly, trying to ignore the butterflies fluttering in my stomach at the thought of him being in my room.
"Fine," he muttered, clearly not thrilled about the arrangement. "But if you think I'm going to be your prisoner..."
I forcefully cut off Blake's protests. "Listen to me, Blake," I said, my tone stern and unwavering. "You will enjoy yourself while you're here, but you are my prisoner. When I come back, we will do something more permanent about your little wandering problem." I closed the door behind me, leaving him alone in my room. As I walked past the living room towards the kitchen, I could hear Mr. Motley chuckling softly.
"Boy doesn't know how lucky he is," he murmured to his wife, shaking his head in amusement.
"Damn fool," Mrs. Motley agreed. "His mind's so full of deals. He can't see what's right in front of him." I couldn't help but smile at their words, feeling a small sense of validation for my actions. Maybe, just maybe, Blake would come to realize that there was more to life than business and escape plans, and perhaps even find something special in our little town and its residents over the course of this Christmas season. "All right," I said, pausing by the door. "Remember, we're doing this for his own good."
"Of course, Noelle."
Sarah's eyes sparkled with mischief. "It's all in the name of keeping Blake safe." I opened the door quietly, peering into the dimly lit room. There, sprawled across the bed, lay Blake, fast asleep. The sight of him, so peaceful and vulnerable, tugged at my heartstrings. He'd been working himself to the bone lately, trying to keep everything under control. But today, it was up to us to outsmart him.
"Blake," I called softly, watching as he stirred, confusion etched upon his face.
He blinked, rubbing at his eyes before focusing on the handcuffs dangling from my finger. Alarm flared in his gaze, and he scrambled into a sitting position.
"Easy there, cowboy," I said, grinning.
"Sarah and I have come up with a couple of ways to ensure you don't try any more escape attempts."
"Escape attempts?"
He frowned, raking a hand through his disheveled hair. "I'm not going anywhere, Noelle. You know that."
"Uh-huh,"
I said, crossing my arms over my chest. "And yet, every time I turn around, you're plotting something. So here's the deal. Either you stay handcuffed for the next few days, or..." I trailed off, glancing at Sarah, who held up one of the shopping bags with a wicked grin.
"Or," she chimed in, "we have another idea that you probably won't like much better."
Blake eyed the bag warily.
"What's the other idea?"
Sarah's grin widened.
"Trust me, it's going to be a blast."
I watched as Blake weighed his options,
curiosity and dread warring within him. He glanced between the handcuffs and the shopping bags, clearly torn. I knew he hated feeling restrained, but something told me the alternative would be even less appealing to him.
"Fine," he sighed at last, resignation heavy in his voice. "Let's hear this brilliant plan of yours."
"Excellent choice," Sarah said with a clap of her hands. "Now, let's get started."
"Wait, what's the other plan?" demanded Blake. "Don't worry your pretty little head about it," I said.
As she began rummaging through the bags, I couldn't help but wonder if we'd gone too far. But then I remembered the stakes, the danger Blake faced if he tried to escape again, and I knew we had no choice.
"All right," I finally said, trying to keep the tone light. "Option two is this. We dress you up in women's clothing. If you think you're going to make a break for it in a dress and heels, then you've got another thing coming."
Blake's eyes widened in disbelief. "You can't be serious."
"Deadly serious," Sarah chimed in, her eyes twinkling with mischief. "Absolutely not," he protested, his cheeks flushing. "I'd rather take the handcuffs."
"Keep in mind," I warned, "you'd be wearing those cuffs for several days straight, and trust me, they're not comfortable."
"Still better than this," he muttered, glaring at the shopping bags as if they were filled with venomous snakes.
"Fine. Have it your way," I said, taking a step towards him with the handcuffs at the ready.
"Wait," he exclaimed, holding up a hand. I could see the internal struggle written all over his face. Finally, he let out a defeated sigh. "Fine. Let's get this over with."
"Yay," Sarah cheered, clapping her hands together. She was clearly enjoying every moment of this. After removing Blake's body hair with a depilatory cream, we started by helping him into a lacy black bra and panties. He looked absolutely mortified, but I reminded myself that this was all for his own safety.
"Wait, something's missing," said Sarah.
"What's that?" I asked.
"Christmas stockings," she replied, holding up a pair of sheer hose with a festive holiday bell pattern on it.
Blake groused as he pulled the festive stockings up his hairless legs, but he did it nonetheless.
"Okay," I said, stepping back and looking him over. "Now it's time for makeup. Sarah, you're our expert here."
"Leave it to me," she replied, grinning like a Cheshire cat as she opened her makeup case. She went to work on Blake's face with the precision of a surgeon, using foundation to even out his skin tone and give him a flawless complexion. Next came contouring, creating subtle shadows and highlights that enhanced his cheekbones and softened the angles of his face.
"Close your eyes," Sarah instructed as she moved on to eyeshadow. She chose a warm palette of golds and browns, blending them expertly across his lids. A flick of liquid eyeliner followed, giving his eyes a subtle lift.
"All right, open up," she said, brandishing a tube of mascara. He complied, and she carefully coated his lashes, giving them length and volume.
"Last but not least," she announced, "lips."
Hey, everybody, you're listening to the Feminization Boudoir podcast from Candy Apple Press. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Victoria Vaughn. Kylie got an email from Spotify last month warning him about adult content on the podcast. For now, there is no problem, but we do have to be careful about what we put on the free podcast so that we can stay on the air. Scenes that might have been allowed before have become a bit dangerous for us. It's one of the reasons that the premium podcast is so important. Because you have to subscribe to listen, we don't have to worry about content limits, so we can include much more titillating scenes. Premium subscribers get the entire audio and not just a clip. That includes all the good parts. And the shows don't just disappear when we're done with them. There's something like 30 hours of content in the archives accessible when you subscribe. It's $15 a month, and we know that's not in everybody's budget. But if you're interested, check out the Premium Feminization Boudoir on Spotify, or check out the link in this show's description.
She applied a rosy pink lipstick, then finished with a swipe of gloss that caught the light just so. "Voila," Sarah declared, stepping back to admire her handiwork. I couldn't help but be impressed. Blake looked like he could have stepped straight out of a glossy magazine. "Can I be done now?" he grumbled, clearly uncomfortable with the whole process. "Almost," I assured him. "Just remember, this is for your own good." As we continued, I couldn't shake the feeling that maybe, just maybe, we were going too far. But if keeping him disguised like this meant he wouldn't try to escape again, then it was worth it. "All right, time for the finishing touches," Sarah said, her eyes gleaming with mischief. She held up a blonde wig, its golden curls cascading like a waterfall. "This is going to be perfect." "Seriously?" Blake groaned. He was trying to seem tough, but the full makeup and the dress made it near impossible. I couldn't help but chuckle at his indignation, despite the knot of unease growing in my chest. "Come on, it's all part of our security system," I reminded him as I picked up a bottle of nail polish. The color was a deep, rich red, which would surely stand out against his pale skin. "Fine, but I better not see any photos of this on social media," he warned, glaring at both of us. I grinned and shook my head, assuring him that his secret would remain safe. As Sarah expertly positioned the wig on Blake's head, I focused on painting his fingernails. With each stroke, the glossy crimson seemed to taunt him, a constant reminder of the absurdity of his predicament. I could tell he was struggling to maintain his composure, though it was hard not to find amusement in his frustration. "Okay, hold still," Sarah instructed, adjusting the wig until it framed his face just right. The transformation was remarkable. Gone were the sharp features that defined his masculinity, replaced by an alluring, almost ethereal beauty. It was unnerving, really, how convincing the disguise had become. "Time for your grand debut," I announced as I retrieved a green dress from one of the shopping bags. The fabric was soft and flowing, with delicate lace accents that would complement his new look perfectly. His shoulders tensed as I handed it to him, but he begrudgingly stepped into the dress and allowed me to zip it up. "Wait, are those locks?" Blake asked incredulously, eyeing the black, strappy sandals I held in my hands. The heels were a modest height, but it was the tiny padlocks adorning the ankle straps that had caught his attention. "Can't have you kicking off your shoes and making a run for it now, can we?" I replied with a smirk. The corners of Sarah's mouth twitched in amusement as she handed me the key to the locks. My friend Anne at the shoe store had this brilliant idea, and my parents had plenty of locks at their shop. You're getting one on your belt, too. It should be quite effective. "Unbelievable," Blake muttered under his breath as I fastened the sandals around his ankles, the locks clicking into place with a sense of finality. He wobbled slightly, unaccustomed to the unfamiliar footwear, but he couldn't deny that they would make escape nearly impossible. "Remember, this is all to keep you from trying anything foolish," I reminded him gently, though I couldn't help but feel a pang of guilt at the humiliation he must be enduring as I secured a wide black belt around his waist with another lock. But desperate times called for desperate measures, and if playing dress-up was what it took to prevent another escape attempt, then so be it. "Let's just get this over with," he grumbled, taking a tentative step forward. His pride may have been bruised, but beneath the layers of makeup and lace, he had to know it was better than the handcuffs. And perhaps in some strange way, it brought us closer together. "All right," I said, giving Blake an encouraging nod. "Let's head back to your room. Just take it slow in those heels." Blake shot me a withering glare as he teetered uncertainly on the black, strappy sandals. He took one shaky step forward, wincing as his ankle wobbled precariously. With each timid step, the unfamiliar footwear seemed to challenge him even more. "Easy now," Sarah cooed playfully, unable to hold back her laughter any longer. She followed closely behind us, ready to catch Blake if he happened to stumble. "Laugh it up," Blake muttered under his breath, gritting his teeth as he continued his unsteady ascent up the stairs. I could tell he was doing his best to maintain some shred of dignity, but it was clear that his frustration was reaching its boiling point. "Hey, you're doing great," I whispered, trying to offer some reassurance. "Just focus on getting to your room, and then you can get away from us until dinner." "Thank God for small mercies," he replied sarcastically, taking another wobbly step. As we reached the top of the staircase, Mrs. Willoughby appeared at the bottom, her eyes widening in shock as she took in the sight before her. For a moment, time seemed to stand still as she gaped at Blake, her mouth opening and closing like a fish out of water. "Goodness gracious," she finally managed to stammer, her hand fluttering to her chest. "Mrs. Willoughby," I called out, forcing a smile onto my face. "It's all just a bit of harmless fun. We thought it might help lighten the mood a little." "Lighten the mood?" she echoed, clearly unconvinced. "Well, I suppose there's no harm in that, just as long as we don't make a habit of it." "Of course not," I agreed, as I glanced over at Blake, who was now beet red with embarrassment. "Very well, then," Mrs. Willoughby said, giving us a curt nod before continuing on her way. As soon as she was out of sight, I exhaled a sigh of relief and turned to Blake. "That wasn't so bad, was it?" "Speak for yourself," he grumbled, hobbling unsteadily towards his room. "I can't wait to get out of this ridiculous getup." "You'll get used to it," I murmured sympathetically, offering him a supportive hand. But despite the ordeal, I couldn't help but feel a small sense of satisfaction. It seemed our plan had worked, at least for now. The twinkling lights on the Christmas tree cast a warm glow across Sarah's face as she held up yet another festive dress, her eyes wide with excitement. I couldn't help but smile at her enthusiasm, though a pang of guilt tugged at me when I glanced over at Blake. He sat on the edge of his bed, looking positively miserable in his current ensemble, a red velvet frock adorned with gold ribbons. I had to admit, despite the circumstances, he did look quite dashing. "Come on, Blake," Sarah pleaded, holding up the green dress with a shimmering snowflake pattern. "Just one more change, and then we'll let you be." Blake sighed heavily, his expression a mix of annoyance and resignation. But to his credit, he stood up and allowed Sarah to help him into the new dress. It was then that I realized just how much he was tolerating for the sake of our plan. "Okay, okay," I said, stepping in before Sarah could start rummaging through her makeup kit again. "I think that's enough dress up for now. Why don't you all head downstairs for some hot cocoa?" I suggested. Sarah nodded and made her way to the stairs. "Hey," I called softly to Blake, who was now leaning back, sprawled on his bed. "Why don't you come join us? There's hot cocoa and cookies, and we're going to do some caroling soon." He eyed me warily. "I appreciate the offer, Noelle, but you know I can't go out like this." "Sure you can," I insisted gently, trying to coax him out. "Everyone's already seen you in dresses and makeup today. Honestly, no one really cares. They're just having fun." "Easy for you to say," he muttered, closing the door slightly. "You're not the one wearing heels and stockings." "Blake," I said firmly, "I know this hasn't been easy for you, but we're all trying to have a good time here. Don't you think it's time you tried to enjoy yourself, too?" "Maybe later," he replied, his voice barely audible through the door. "All right," I sighed, knowing when to pick my battles, "but the offer still stands if you change your mind." With that, I left him to sulk in his room, hoping that at some point during the night, he'd find the courage to join us. Over the next few days, Mr. Motley took it upon himself to bring Blake his lunches. I found it strangely endearing how the older gentleman would sneak up the stairs with a tray of food for our reluctant guest. It wasn't long before they struck up an odd friendship, which lifted my spirits. I couldn't help but smile when I'd pass by Blake's door and hear them laughing together. "Here you go, young man," Mr. Motley said one afternoon as he entered Blake's room, balancing a tray filled with a steaming bowl of soup and a grilled cheese sandwich, cut into neat triangles, just the way I always made them. "I hope you're hungry." "Thank you, Mr. Motley," Blake replied, carefully accepting the tray from him. He was wearing a frilly pink dress Sarah had picked out this time, complete with lace gloves and white stockings. The sight might have made me laugh if it weren't for the genuine appreciation that shone in his eyes. "Ah, don't mention it," Mr. Motley chuckled, settling into a chair across from Blake. "You know, back in my day, we didn't have half the variety of fancy clothes you youngsters have now. But I must say, that dress brings out the color in your cheeks quite nicely." "Very funny," Blake grumbled, but there was no real annoyance in his tone. In fact, I could see the corners of his mouth quiver ever so slightly upward as I spied from out in the hallway pretending to fold laundry. Days passed, and despite the growing camaraderie between Mr. Motley and Blake, the latter continued to sequester himself away in his room. The festive atmosphere of the house weighed heavily on me, knowing that one of our guests refused to partake in it, and I knew something had to change. "All right, enough is enough," I muttered to myself, grabbing a stack of Christmas movies from the living room before making my way upstairs. "Blake," I called out, rapping lightly on his door, "I brought you something." The door creaked open, revealing Blake in a green velvet dress adorned with a charming Christmas pin. His makeup was flawless, and he wore his stockings and locked heels with an air of resignation. "What's this?" he asked, eyeing the DVDs in my hands. "Christmas movies," I replied brightly. "I thought we could watch them together. Maybe get you in the holiday spirit." "Really?" he said skeptically, but stepped aside to let me in anyway. "Really?" I confirmed with a nod, settling onto the edge of his bed as he sat down next to me. "We'll start with It's a Wonderful Life and see where the night takes us." "Fine," Blake sighed, finally cracking a small smile. "But only if we can have popcorn." "Deal," I agreed, my heart swelling with hope that perhaps, just perhaps, we were breaking through to him. I popped in the DVD, trying to ignore the elephant in the room, Blake's incessant pouting. I knew he had been humiliated, but surely he could see the joy and laughter his situation had brought to everyone else. As George Bailey's life unfolded on the screen, I couldn't help but steal glances at him, worried that he still wasn't enjoying himself. "Have you come to let me go?" he finally asked, breaking the silence. "Blake," I said with a chuckle, nodding towards the dresser. "I could grab the handcuffs, if that's what you'd prefer." He scowled, clearly not finding my attempt at humor funny. I sighed, realizing I needed a different approach. "Okay, look," I began, pausing the movie. "I know this hasn't been easy for you, but have you ever considered that maybe, just maybe, getting pulled over was your lucky break?" "Are you suggesting that wearing dresses and makeup is some kind of blessing?" he snapped back. No, not exactly," I said, shaking my head. "But think about it, Blake. It's Christmas Eve. You're here, surrounded by people who are having the time of their lives, enjoying the Christmas spirit, and yet all you can focus on is feeling sorry for yourself. Have you ever heard the story of Scrooge?" "Of course I have," he grumbled. "What's your point?" "Scrooge was too busy trying to make money to realize what truly mattered in life. Love, friendship, and family," I explained, looking deeply into his eyes. He needed three ghosts to remind him of that. But maybe, for you, all it took was getting pulled over and being forced to slow down. Blake stared at me, his brow furrowed as he mulled over my words. I could sense the wheels turning in his head as he wrestled with the idea that maybe, just maybe, there was some truth to what I was saying. "Fine," he said at last, a hint of surrender in his voice. "I'll try to see it your way, but can we at least finish the movie first?" "Absolutely," I agreed, a warmth blooming in my chest as I pressed play. We settled back into our seats, the flickering images on the screen casting a comforting glow around us. For the first time in days, I began to feel hopeful that Blake might finally open himself up to the magic of the season and learn to appreciate what truly mattered. As the movie progressed, I couldn't help but watch Blake out of the corner of my eye. The way the light from the television danced across his face made him appear softer, and I felt an inexplicable urge to reach out and touch him. "Blake," I whispered, just as Donna Reed was hiding behind some bushes from Jimmy Stewart on screen. He turned to me, the green in his eyes more vibrant than ever, framed by the delicate makeup that Sarah had applied earlier. In that moment, it was as if the universe had conspired to bring us closer together. I don't know what came over me, but I leaned in and pressed my lips against his. To my surprise and delight, he didn't pull away. Instead, he kissed me back. His lips were warm and soft, and a jolt of electricity passed between us as our mouths moved in perfect harmony. It felt like the most amazing Christmas magic I had ever experienced. But just as quickly as it started, it ended. Blake recoiled, his eyes wide and filled with confusion. "What are you doing?" he demanded, his voice shaking. "Noelle, I need to get out of here." "That's not a choice, Blake," I said. "Besides, where would you go?" "I don't care," he said, getting up from the bed about to do something drastic. In that instant, something inside me snapped. I didn't want to let him go. Not after everything we had been through together. So, without thinking, I grabbed the handcuffs off the dresser and swiftly locked them around his wrists, binding his hands behind his back. "Maybe you need a little time out," I said, trying to sound calm, even though my heart was pounding in my chest. "You've spent so much time feeling sorry for yourself. And yet, here we are, sharing this incredible moment." "Is this supposed to be funny?" he asked, his voice strained. "Because it's really not." "Blake, I hesitated, struggling to find the words to explain myself. "I just want you to see what's right in front of you. It's all here for you if you'd only open your heart to it. But you want to run off and get in serious police trouble." As I looked into his eyes, searching for some sign that my message had gotten through, I realized that this was a pivotal moment, not just for Blake, but for both of us. And as the shadows of doubt flickered across his face, I knew that our journey was far from over. 9:10. The aroma of beef tenderloin filled the kitchen, mingling with the scent of cinnamon and pine from the festive decorations. I hummed along to the Christmas carols playing in the background as I focused on preparing the perfect meal for our guests. In the midst of my culinary endeavor, I hadn't noticed Mr. Motley slip away from the jovial gathering and make his way upstairs. The old man had a soft spot for Blake, and he couldn't bear to see him wallow in self-pity any longer. What happened next? I'm not sure. I only know what the two of them told me went on. "Blake," Mr. Motley said gently as he knocked on the door, "may I come in?" "Go away," came the muffled response. "Son, I can't leave you like this. We need to talk." Reluctantly, Blake allowed Mr. Motley to enter the room. The sight of him handcuffed and dressed in an emerald green gown would have been comical if it weren't for the deep sadness that weighed heavily upon him. "Did Noel send you?" Blake asked, bitterness lacing his words. "No, this is entirely my doing," Mr. Motley replied, settling himself into a nearby chair. "I want to tell you a story, Blake, about choices and what truly matters in life." As I continued to cook downstairs, completely unaware of their conversation, Mr. Motley shared his own tale of ambition and love. He spoke of how he once had the opportunity to play piano for Etta James and make a fortune, but chose instead to become a music teacher so he could spend his life with Mrs. Motley. "Money and fame can be fleeting, Blake, but love, true love, that lasts a lifetime," he advised. "I've seen the way you and Noel look at each other. Don't throw away your chance for happiness." "Is it really worth it?" Blake asked hesitantly, the first crack in his stubborn facade beginning to show. "More than you can possibly imagine," Mr. Motley replied sincerely as he left. Downstairs, the festive atmosphere continued as we gathered around the table for Christmas Eve dinner. I glanced longingly at the empty seat beside me, wishing that Blake was there to share in the celebration. But I knew he needed time to reflect on everything that had happened. And so we dined without him, raising our glasses in a toast to love, friendship, and the magic of Christmas. I would fix a plate for Blake later, but maybe for now he needed some time to reflect. Soon, we had moved into the living room, where Mr. Motley played the piano, and Mrs. Motley sang "All I Want for Christmas Is You" with all the gusto and soul that Mariah Carey ever had. Even Mrs. Willoughby couldn't help but get up and dance. And then, there he was. Blake appeared at the top of the stairs, handcuffed and trying to maneuver while wearing that tight dress and heels, a sight that left the entire room in stunned silence. I could see the mixture of amusement, shock, and disbelief on everyone's faces as he gingerly made his way down the steps, his tall frame swaying slightly with each step. I tried to suppress a smile, but it was difficult not to admire his determination. "Good evening, ladies and gentlemen," Blake said smoothly, despite the precarious situation he found himself in. His emerald eyes sparkled with mischief as they met mine, a silent acknowledgement that we were both enjoying this unexpected twist. "I must admit," he continued, "I had every intention of serenading you all with a rousing rendition of Holly Jolly Christmas. However, given my current attire," he gestured to the heels with a wry grin, "I think Santa Baby might be more appropriate." A ripple of laughter spread across the room, and I could see the tension that had built up during Blake's entrance dissipate. I could barely contain my excitement as he prepared to sing. There was something thrilling about seeing this charming rogue embrace the spirit of Christmas. "All right, then," he announced, clearing his throat. "Let's get this show on the road, Mr. Motley." As he began to sing to the piano accompaniment, I couldn't help but marvel at how easily he had won over the crowd. It seemed as though everyone in the room had momentarily forgotten his initial misdeeds and sour attitude and were now captivated by his performance. And, if I was being honest with myself, I was just as enchanted as they were. This should have been such a humiliating song for a guy to sing, especially in the high-energy way that Blake was singing. His voice flowed through the room like liquid velvet, enchanting everyone within earshot. I could see their eyes widen, their expression shifting from disbelief to delight as he crooned the sultry lyrics of "Santa Baby." Even in heels and handcuffs, Blake was a force to be reckoned with. When the last note faded away, the room erupted in applause. Mrs. Motley, her cheeks flushed with excitement, leaned over to me and whispered,
Nobody will ever hold a candle to Eartha Kitt, but that performance was a close second. Agreed, I murmured, my heart swelling with pride. As the evening progressed, I decided it was time to uncuff Blake so he could fully enjoy the festivities. We shared a conspiratorial smile as I unlocked the handcuffs, and I couldn't help but feel a spark of connection between us. Thank you, he said quietly, rubbing his wrists. I promise not to cause any more trouble tonight. See that you don't, I warned, only half joking. For a while, everything was perfect. Guests mingled, laughter bubbled through the air, and the aroma of gingerbread and spiced cider filled the room. At one point, Blake slipped into the kitchen to pour himself a glass of eggnog. It wasn't until several minutes had passed that I suddenly realized he was gone. Where's Blake? I asked, trying to keep the panic from my voice as I scanned the room. Last I saw, he went into the kitchen, Miss Willoughby replied, her brow furrowing in concern. Stay here, I instructed, my heart pounding as I dashed towards the kitchen. The moment I stepped into the kitchen, my heart dropped, and I raced towards the back door. Without a second thought, I sprinted out into the night, the frigid air biting my skin as snowflakes danced around me. Blake! I shouted, my breath forming clouds in the cold. There he was, just a few yards away, standing in the moonlit snow with an awestruck expression on his face. Before I could think, I launched myself at him, tackling him to the ground. Oof! He grunted, snow billowing around us as we landed. What's gotten into you? Relax, he said, chuckling softly. I just saw that it started snowing and wanted to experience the Christmas snow with fresh eyes. Then again, I think I like getting tackled by you. Are you sure you never played football? My pulse slowed, and I realized how ridiculous I must have looked. I couldn't help but laugh, both from relief and the absurdity of the situation. You scared me, I admitted, feeling my cheeks flush with embarrassment. Sorry, he murmured, his gaze softening. I didn't mean to worry you. As the laughter faded, our eyes locked, and the world seemed to slow down. The snow continued to fall gently around us, blanketing the ground in white. Despite the cold, a warmth spread between us, and I found myself drawn closer to Blake. Christmas really is magical, isn't it? He whispered, his breath warm against my cold cheeks. Maybe it's not just Christmas, I replied, unable to tear my gaze away from his. Without another word, our lips met in a tender, passionate kiss. We rolled in the snow, our laughter mingling with our breaths, as we clung to each other in the freezing cold. It was as if all the barriers between us had melted away, leaving only the connection we'd been building throughout the night. I've been thinking a lot, Blake said, his voice husky as our lips parted. And I want to get to know you better. Me too, I replied, my heart soaring with happiness. And as we lay there, tangled in each other's arms beneath the falling snow, I couldn't help but believe that for once, everything would be all right. Blake, I can have my uncle put in a word with the judge to keep you as my prisoner, I joked, hesitating for a moment before continuing. If that's what you want, of course. He looked at me, his eyes twinkling like the snowflakes caught in his long lashes. I think I'd like that, he said softly, offering me his arm. As we walked back towards the house, arm in arm, the warmth between us seemed to be enough to ward off the chill of the wintry air. The door swung open before we could even reach it, revealing a concerned Mrs. Willoughby. Thank goodness. You're both all right, she exclaimed, relief evident in her voice. Of course we are, Mrs. Willoughby, I reassured her, my free hand patting her shoulder gently. We were just enjoying the snow. The Motleys stood behind her, their smiles wide and genuine.
It was clear they were thrilled to see Blake and me together, sharing in our newfound connection. As we stepped into the warmth of the living room, the scent of cinnamon and cloves enveloping us, I couldn't help but feel a sense of belonging. "Isn't it wonderful how love can bloom in the most unexpected places?" Mrs. Motley whispered to her husband, who nodded in agreement, his eyes never leaving our intertwined arms. "Indeed, my dear," he murmured, his gaze shifting to meet mine. "It's a true Christmas miracle." My heart swelled with happiness, and I felt a surge of gratitude for the people around us. For Miss Willoughby, for the Motleys, and even for Blake. Despite the unusual circumstances that had brought us together, it seemed as though we were meant to be here, in this moment. Maybe that was a miracle. "Here's to new beginnings," I said under my breath, my eyes locked on Blake's as he squeezed my arm gently in response. "Here's to new beginnings," he echoed, his voice barely audible above the festive music playing softly in the background. And as we took our place among our newfound friends and family, it felt as though anything was possible. Mr. Motley cleared his throat, drawing the attention of everyone in the room as he raised his glass. "Ladies and gentlemen, I want to say a few words on this most joyous of nights." Blake's fingers tightened around mine, and my heart raced within my chest as our eyes met. The laughter and conversation that had filled the room seemed to recede into the background, leaving only the soft glow of the twinkling Christmas lights and the warmth of Blake's gaze. "Christmas is a time for love," Mr. Motley continued, his voice resonant and sure. "It's a time to cherish those we hold dear, to reach out to others with kindness and compassion, and to open our hearts to new possibilities." I looked over and saw the Leonards kissing. It was ironic to see three couples in different stages of their relationship so deeply in love. I felt bad for Mrs. Willoughby, whose lover had passed on, but whose love remained. In that moment, it felt like Mr. Motley was speaking directly to us, acknowledging the unconventional circumstances that had led to our unexpected connection. My cheeks flushed with warmth as Blake's thumb gently traced circles on the back of my hand, an intimate gesture that sent tingles up my arm. "We have all been blessed to witness something truly special this evening," Mr. Motley said, his eyes twinkling with unspoken understanding. "The budding of a new relationship forged in the fires of adversity and tempered by the magic of the Christmas season." A murmur of agreement rippled through the crowd, and I couldn't help but smile as I thought of the journey that had brought Blake and me together. It had been filled with surprises and challenges, but also with laughter, tenderness, and undeniable chemistry. May we all take a moment to reflect on the power of love and the beauty of the holiday season, Mr. Motley concluded, raising his glass high. And may we carry these lessons with us throughout the coming year. To love and Christmas. "Love and Christmas," the assembled guests echoed, clinking glasses and offering each other warm smiles. As the room erupted in festive cheer, Blake leaned in close, his breath hot against my ear. "I never thought I'd be grateful for a pair of handcuffs," he murmured, lips quivering in amusement. "But if it led me to you in this moment, then I guess miracles really do happen." "Just kiss me," I whispered back as we clank our glasses together and drank deeply, sealing our commitment to a new beginning. As the sounds of laughter and celebration filled the air, all I could think was how right Mr. Motley had been. This was going to be a very merry Christmas indeed.
And through the miracles of forced feminization and the Christmas spirit, we have love. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed that one. Mistress DJ does a great job reading it, and I love doing those stories. So I really do. It's a Christmas tradition for me, and there's no other way to put it. I know it's never going to be a huge hit, but I still love it. I have big plans for next year. Please don't go anywhere. I think this is going to become even bigger as a podcast. And we're really, you know, now that I don't have that whole teaching thing hanging over my head, there's a lot more I can do, and I'm kind of excited about it. So anyway, I hope you had a good Christmas if you celebrate it. And by my count, next time I do a podcast, a free podcast, it's going to be New Year's Day. So here's to a wonderful 2024 for us all. I will be back next year. I hope you will be too. Take care.